Clip versus DHS, Mr. Jacobson.
May it please the court. The plain language of 5 U.S.C. section 8401.17a defines a law enforcement officer for retirement purposes as an employee the duties of whose position are primarily the investigation, apprehension, or detention of individuals suspected or convicted of offenses against the criminal laws of the United States and are sufficiently rigorous that employment opportunities be limited to young and physically vigorous individuals. There is no dispute in this case that petitioner satisfies the latter prong. So this case, from its inception, is about whether or not Mr. Clip's duties, actual duties, what he did, satisfy that statute. From its inception, the statute has been to examine what the employee actually does.
What are we to look at, the actual duties that were performed or the description of those duties in the different documents and sources?
So the OPM three-prong test guides us in that regard. The short answer is both. The OPM three-prong test references, which is part of, it's referenced in the Watson case.
OPM three-part test. We have a decision, Crowley, which lays this all out. Isn't that providing the roadmap that we're supposed to follow here?
In Crowley, I believe, Judge, the question really is more applicable in Davis and in Ellis and in Little, and not as much in the Crowley matter.
Doesn't Crowley set forth a standard for us to consider? The standard for determining whether, the Leo status, right? And you look at it, I believe Crowley is the case that, for example, talks about how you look at the position itself, and then you also have to look at the actual duties performed by the appellant here.
That's correct. All of which is to be evaluated. But in this case, the administrative judge gave an outsized amount of emphasis to the official position documents and minimized or marginalized the actual duties.
Okay, but you're not contending that the position documents here qualified him for Leo credit, right?
Correct.
Just the actual duties.
Except to the extent, Your Honor, that if you were to look carefully at the JAT or the tool that is used in this case, we'll commonly refer to as the position description, which is at Appendix 58. If you strip out the supervisory duties and the managerial duties, the JAT actually refers specifically to the primary duties of a law enforcement officer. If you look at it closely.
I mean, you can't seriously contend that the position description qualified him for primary Leo credit.
Correct.
All right, so we're talking about the actual duties.
Correct.
Okay, so the AJ sort of seemed to mix up the position description and the actual duties.
I agree, Aaron. That's correct. In fact, the AJ actually mixed up the fact that the position was created as a supervisory position and morphed it into the position existed for a supervisory role, when in fact that's not at all what was going on in this case with Mr. Clip. Mr. Clip was not performing any supervisory or managerial duties whatsoever. His actual day-to-day duties were all law enforcement, 100%.
Wasn't he also, if I remember correctly, he was also performing some duties of just kind of communicating and also kind of being a liaison between the different offices?
To some extent, yes. I mean, in order to work with other law enforcement agencies, as Mr. Clip did, so interfacing with the FBI, running investigations with JTTF, interfacing with TSA's Office of Inspection, it necessarily requires him to communicate with and liaise with other law enforcement entities.
But those are not Leo functions, are they?
Liaising alone is not. That's correct.
for interfacing?
Conducting surveillance. If you look at what he was actually doing, running investigations, interrogating subjects and witnesses, he was conducting surveillance in dangerous areas.
In a circumstance like this, what is the test that the court should apply? In looking at different facts to look at the actual duties, is it the actual duties have to be of a type that would be considered LEO duties? Those have to be more than 50% of the time? Or how do we evaluate that? Or how should it have been evaluated below?
That's correct, Judge. What is important in this case is that the judge gave outsized attention to the official position description and ignored, for example, the Bingaman factors, which aren't in and of themselves dispositive, but they are important factors to weigh.
The Bingaman factors are the factors that relate to someone's actual duties.
Yes, okay. That's correct. Has frequent direct contact with criminal suspects, authorized to carry a firearm, interrogates witnesses and subjects, giving Miranda warnings when appropriate, works for long periods without a break, is on call 24 hours a day, and is required to maintain a level of physical fitness, all of which Mr. Clip qualified for. The six factors really capture the essence of what Congress intended by the statute. So that was one thing that the court really fell short on, the AJ really fell short on. In fact, she mentions that he satisfied several factors. I believe that's in her decision at Appendix 21, but does not articulate which factors he did and did not satisfy, although we disagree, we believe, and the record evidence shows that he did in fact satisfy those factors. If you look at a position-oriented approach and you look at the agency's evidence, the position description did not apply to him. Mr. Belcher's declaration violated FRE Rule 701 and 702. It wasn't based on any personal knowledge. It was highly qualified. It did not apply. It is basically a post hoc justification for the agency's determination. The core roles and responsibilities document that the AJ relied upon wasn't issued until 2008, which is almost a year before Mr. Clip finished the position.
It sounds to me as if you're almost arguing that we should reconsider the weight that was given to these different pieces of evidence. For example, with the Belcher declaration, you pretty much are arguing it's irrelevant, right? Whereas you can look at the Belcher declaration as being relevant as to describing what the title means and what the position, the title of the position, and what the job entails, and not necessarily what Mr. Clip did. But that's relevant too, right? So we're dealing with a case that really we look at whether there's substantial evidence that supports the determination. It seems to me that your argument where you want us to put more weight in this basket instead of this one doesn't address the substantial evidence standard of review that we have before us.
Well, thank you for that question, Judge. We are not asking the court to reweigh the evidence. The board's decision rested on unsupported factual findings. Substantial evidence, for example, does not support the board's factual finding that when Mr. Clip was performing primary law enforcement duties, these situations were of an emergency, incidental, or temporary nature. That was the AJ's finding at Appendix 20.
Having found on 19 that it occupied 50% of his time.
Exactly. The AJ also failed to apply the law correctly. The reasons for the position's existence, not merely its creation, are determinative. And this goes to your question, Your Honor, that the ID states that, as noted in Watson, The board applies a position-oriented approach to determining enhanced retirement, focusing on the first prong of the regulatory test. However, in Watson, the MSPB properly determined whether the purpose for the position changed, that is, whether the purpose for the position's existence was different than the purpose for its creation. So here, unlike Watson, the basic reasons for the position's existence were different than what it was created for. Therefore, appellant should have been eligible. Instead, the AJ found that the reason for the appellant's AFSDLE position is to supervise investigators and to establish and maintain relationships with federal, state, and local law enforcement authorities on behalf of TSA. That's also at Appendix 20. So the judge misapplied Watson and its progeny, rendering a decision which was factually inaccurate and inconsistent with congressional intent. That is not only an abuse of discretion, but her decision is not based on substantial evidence. So we are not asking the court to simply reweigh the evidence. And I did want to reserve some time, Your Honors.
Okay. Let's see, Mr. Kerr. Kerr, how do you pronounce that?
Kerr, Your Honor.
Kerr, okay.
Okay, please, the court. Mr. Clipp asserts that the Assistant Federal Security Director position, in which he was appointed in July of 2004, is a primary law enforcement position. He could have made this assertion when he challenges the TSA October 5th, 2016 decision, but he didn't. When in 2019 he asked the TSA for the first time to consider whether this primary law enforcement position is a primary law enforcement position, the TSA said this is covered under our October 26th decision and that no additional decision or determination is necessary. TSA's 26th decision states that the Assistant Federal Security Director for Law Enforcement is a secondary law enforcement position. The final decision that Mr. Clipp is attempting to challenge, therefore, is the October 26th decision. And the board did not have jurisdiction over TSA's refusal to take this up again in 2019.
Now, if we disagree with you on that, do you have an argument on the merits?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If the board did have jurisdiction, the decision to uphold TSA's determination that Mr. Clipp's position is secondary law enforcement is supported by substantial evidence.
You agree, don't you, that there are two separate inquiries here. The first one is about the position description, and the second one is about the actual duties. And they were clear in the opening argument that they're not relying on the position descriptions, which are seemingly a mess. It's not clear whether they're accurate or which ones are applicable. So they're saying we've got to look at actual duties. The problem, it seems to me, is that the AJ here mixed up the two things. In turning to the question of actual duties, the AJ kept coming back to the position descriptions, which is not the right way to analyze it.
Your Honor, the government's reading of the administrative justices or administrative judge's opinion is that she's applying the position-oriented approach from Crawler, or which really comes from Watson.
Well, but that's the problem, because we've said in Crowley that's not the sole test. That even if you can't satisfy the position description, which admittedly the employee here doesn't, you still have to go on and look at actual duties. So what the AJ should have done is analyze the actual duty evidence without regard to the position descriptions, but it seems to me that the AJ didn't do that. It's all mixed up,
Your Honor,
separating the two.
On Appendix 21, the administrative judge is looking at all the evidence, including the position description.
Well, that's exactly the problem. It's mixing it up.
Well,
and then in the page 20. Two, he says, although the appellant's evidence supported he was involved in the investigation, he failed to establish that these were the primary duties of the position, or that the primary duties constituted the basic reasons for the existence. But that's based on the position description documents in part in the preceding cases, and not just on actual duties.
Well, Your Honor, the AJ also looked at the annual appraisals which does contain Mr. Clipp's actual duties. And the judge looked at those as confirming what was in the description.
Where do you see that in the opinion? I just want to know what you're pointing to. I mean, because it seemed to me she discussed this at pages 20 through 22, so...
Well, at 2021, at the top of 21, the AJ is looking at the Belcher's declaration, position description, core roles and responsibility documents, and the performance appraisals.
That's exactly the problem, is mixing up the position description with the other stuff.
Well, the only challenge that Mr. Clipp makes to the position description is that it contains supervisory duties.
That's irrelevant. We're past the position descriptions. The question is what the actual duties were. And the problem is that the AJ didn't conduct a separate and independent analysis of the actual duties separated from the position descriptions.
Well,
do you think that maybe later on that page where the AJ talks about crediting the appellant's argument, was it that? Is more something that you would rely on for saying she didn't look at just the position?
Well, the AJ did credit the argument that Mr. Clipp never supervised, but then went on to say that he did satisfy some of the Bingham factors. So AJ did look at the Bingham factors, but then concluded that the documents as a whole show that his primary duties were working with local law enforcement, we're liaisoning with local law enforcement.
Yeah, but Crowley tells us the first question is rigorousness, physical rigorousness. And so where are the findings that in actual fact that the physical rigorousness requirement wasn't satisfied? We said in Crowley that's the primary consideration.
Well, Your Honor, the burden is on Mr. Clipp, and the AJ is saying he did not fulfill that burden. He did not show that he is in a primary law enforcement role.
Wait a minute. This is on page 22, the AJ says, appellant averred he was required to work long hours without a break and that he was on call 24 hours a day, and then says, even if true, this is less probative. So it's crediting actually what he averred, right?
Well, yes.
So where are you saying that he didn't prove that he had rigorous work schedule?
Well, I didn't mean to suggest he didn't prove that he had a rigorous work schedule. He didn't satisfy his burden to show that his primary duties were the investigation and apprehension of suspected criminals.
Do you see that here somewhere saying that, you know, given all of his things that he says he did in his position, that that's not enough? I'm having a hard time finding that on these pages.
Well, in her review of the evidence, she discusses that one of Mr. Clipp's witnesses, Mr. Austin, said that he admitted that the contact Mr. Clipp had with criminal suspects was not frequent. He did have some contact. This is on page 19. But his contact was not frequent. And then
He said the appellant would pursue and arrest suspected criminals if it was needed to do so, and that he spent at least 50% of his time pursuing criminal investigations. But that appears to be inconsistent with what is said on the next page, that these duties were only of an emergency, incidental, or temporary nature. 50% is enough, isn't it?
Well, that's Mr. Clipp's testimony. That's his declaration. The AJ did not credit
where
that
did she say she doesn't
declaration.
Credit?
Well, it's implicit in her ruling that she's looking at the appraisals, the annual appraisals. She's looking at all the evidence, the declarations, and deciding that this Mr. Clipp's primary duties relate to developing relationships with other law enforcement agencies.
Can I ask you something? There's a sentence that's confusing to me. I want to know what you make of it. It's at the bottom of page 20. It says, even if the appellant frequently and regularly perform the duties of a primary covered position, I mean, primary LEO, right? These situations were of an emergency, incidental, or temporary nature. What does that mean?
Well, here the AJ...
The first clause seems to be inconsistent with the last.
Here the AJ is looking at what the basic reason for the existence of the position is, which is the regulations, 5 CFR 842.802. The primary duty, the first prong, is the paramount influence or weight.
I thought that this sentence were like what he actually did as opposed to the duties of his position. You disagree with that?
Well, DAJ is talking about the duties, but saying that if, even to the extent he does, sorry, Your Honor, I lost the part in here, but even to the extent he does, investigative apprehension duties, even to the extent he does that, that's not his primary role. That's not why...
The frequently and regularly part that has me confused.
Yes.
Well, put together with the fact that on the previous page, she recites testimony and spent 50% of his time doing it.
But she also cites testimony that he did not have frequent contact with criminal suspects. Mr. Austin testified
to
that.
That's usually why we remain in cases, because the findings are inconsistent.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the AJ's findings is that his primary duty was to maintain relationships with other law enforcement authorities. And that's reflected in the appraisals, and it's also reflected in the position description and the responsibilities description.
Forget about it. Position description's not relevant.
Well,
where does she say that his actual duties didn't involve criminal investigations?
Your Honor, the AJ is referring to the performance appraisals, which are his appraisals of what he's doing. On the top of page 21. It's one of the pieces of evidence she's looking at.
She lumps them all together. The position description, the Belcher Declaration, the roles and responsibilities. And then she talks about the position was created for the purpose of... I don't see a finding about what he actually did.
The performance appraisals are what he actually did. That's
right. But she lumps them all together. That's the continuing problem with this opinion.
Ultimate finding is that Mr. Clip did not show that his position was most immediately involved with investigating, apprehending suspected criminals, and those findings are supported by substantial evidence. That the court can look at these things, the evaluations, the appraisals, separately. And use that as the substantial evidence to support the AJ's findings that he did not, in his position description doesn't say it, and he didn't in real time based on the...
Where's the finding about his actual duties didn't involve?
The very next line, Your Honor, he says they, meaning all the documents that I understand you're criticizing that she looked at all the evidence mashed together, but they support that his major duties involve building working relationships with other government agencies, and that his other duties, so not, she's no longer looking at what the the position was designed for, but is now looking at his duties. Other duties included conducting administrative investigations, not criminal, heading VIP movements through airports, that's not related to primary law enforcement, and developing disaster preparedness management plans and other functions. And right there, she's talking about his duties. So she is looking at both. What was the position created for, which is what she has to do under the regulations and this court's decisions in Crowley and Watson, and also what his duties were. I thus conclude that...
So when you would say that, where she said, I'm sorry, you were about to read this, but I thus conclude that the basis and purpose of his position was not to investigate, apprehend, or detain suspected criminals. You say, think that sentence is based on what he actually did or based on his position description? Well,
in the context of the sentence before, where she's talking about his major duties, I think what she means by the basis are the duties he's providing. He's actually in doing. Again, the sentence right before that, she's looking at his major duties and what they involve. And that's what she's basing her decision on, the both what it was designed for.
What about how when she's talking about this here, this is already pointed out, but she's referring to the Belcher Declaration, the position description, the core roles and responsibility documents, and the performance appraisals. So looking at as a whole all of those documents and making these conclusions, as opposed to looking... separating out, first of all, I find that the position is not sufficient. The description of it is not going to make him a Leo. But the question is whether, even though he had this position description, he nonetheless was acting as a Leo.
So, well, perhaps inartfully, but what she's saying here is that they're consistent, that the position description doesn't get him there, and then also his major duties. And those major duties are in the performance appraisals. I mean, that's where where it shows that he's handling VIP movements. That shows where he's developing disaster preparedness plans, and that's what she's referring to. And so, again, saying that the basis and purpose is perhaps inartful, but she is looking at both aspects. What was the position designed to do, and what was he actually doing? Which, again, are these things that she lists here and that are reflected when you look in the record in the appraisals?
Before you sit down, one question. So, assume hypothetically we were to decide that this needed to be remanded to have a redo. Is there any way to get this case together with the other one pending before the board? Because it seems sort of wasteful and inefficient to have them separated.
I agree. It seems wasteful to have both of these cases covering the same time period and the same facts in these separate cases. I'm not sure if there is a way to consolidate at the board. I don't know the board's practice. I mean, one solution could be if Mr. Clip pulled his appeal to the board, and then I guess brought it to this court with. It does go back on remand. I assume it's going to come back up to this court, so, and then combine them here. But I don't know the status of how the board could combine them with that one still pending.
Where are we on the confirmations of the board members? They still haven't been confirmed.
I'm sorry, I don't know that either.
All right. Any other questions? No. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jacobs, you have a little bit of time here. Do you have an answer to that question as to how they might be combined?
I can answer the last question first, Judge, that there are now two members. They have been confirmed, so there is a working board. I don't believe the third member has been confirmed, but there is a working board. As far as consolidating Clip 1 with Clip 2, they are separate time frames that were evaluated by separate administrative judges. So procedurally, I'd be willing to work with the agency to try to work through those things. I can't think off the top of my head the procedural mechanism for doing it. But now that we have a full board, or at least a majority of board members, there must be a way to consolidate the cases.
In your opening brief, I thought your opening brief had more of an emphasis seeking reversal. Did you also ask for a vacature in the alternative?
I believe we did.
I think if you look at the conclusion of the brief, that's what's requested.
I believe it's the very last page of the very last page.
In the alternative, this court should remand to the board to correct the legal to apply the correct legal standard.
Yes, that's correct. The facts, though, if we're looking at his actual duties, clearly support a finding that he spent greater than 50% of his time performing primary law enforcement functions. He was required to attend and graduate from the criminal investigator training program in order to keep his job. He did attend and graduate from what is known as CITP, carried a firearm at all times. He conducted criminal investigations greater than 50% of the time. He conducted criminal investigations away from the airport in both Florida and throughout Louisiana. You have a transcript from his direct supervisor, the federal security director, who said that Mr. Clip spent at least 50% of his time performing law enforcement. He responded, I would say he spent all of his time performing law enforcement duties. He also said,
on page 22 of the decision, the AJ reports that he further failed to provide any documentary evidence such as incident, complaint reports, overtime records, injury reports, or other similar records. Was there any evidence, documentary evidence, that was submitted to substantiate that the work was this rigorous work? And
he did submit case logs. But, you know, unfortunately, we're going back more than a decade to try to, you know, document what happened, which is why Mr. Austin was deposed and we received a declaration from Special Agent Kent Daniel, who worked with him, and Mr. Clip submitted...
You were about to say he did submit documentary evidence?
Other than his case logs and his 9-page detailed declaration, we were unable to locate any case file documentation because it was so old.
So it's just mainly based on his recollection?
Yes. And the testimony of Mr. Austin and of Ken Daniels, which, by the way, Your Honors, is not rebutted. There's nowhere in the record does the agency submit any documentation to rebut.
Why in this situation wouldn't the Belcher declaration be significant?
So there are a number of problems with Mr. Belcher's declaration. First of all, Mr. Belcher said that he held a position of oversight over the program. We don't know what oversight means. He barely overlapped with Mr. Clip's time that we're requesting in this case because he only held that that position of oversight until November 2005, which is at the very beginning of that time period. Mr. Belcher indicates that he's currently assigned as the Deputy Assistant Director for Region 2. It doesn't say when he was assigned to that position or what he did for the relevant time frame from November 2005 to November 2009. Importantly, Mr. Belcher admits that the position was still being developed within the organization and the roles and responsibilities were still being refined. So if the agency didn't even know what the position was about, how can the AJ rely on it and mix up all the evidence together? There's no legitimate foundation for Mr. Belcher's opinions. He qualifies his opinions throughout by saying, it is my understanding and to my knowledge. If he had direct knowledge of this, he would say it.
This is based on...
I find it remarkable that Mr. Clip would be hired to in a supervisory role, managerial supervisory role, and because they haven't yet filled the subservient positions, he doesn't have anybody supervised, so he decides, apparently, I'm going to go and become a law enforcement officer and arrest people. Is the TSA structure really this loose?
Well, I can't speak for the TSA structure. I can say what happened in this case. You have testimony from his direct supervisor who assigned him to the Joint Terrorism Task Force. How that could be anything but primary law enforcement duties, I can't tell you.
He's a liaison there.
No, he worked cases. He conducted surveillance. He was on arrest teams. He was on search warrant teams. He actually worked cases with an aviation nexus to JTTF. And the other problem with this case and the way TSA handled Mr. Clip, look at the SF-50s that are in the record. They go back and forth between criminal investigator and AFSDLE. There is a number of administrative issues.
Do you think this is because the investigators were all stationed primarily in Atlantic City? Or what was the...
It's hard to know, Your Honor. I can't explain how or why TSA dropped the ball so significantly on this in terms of making it clear what AFSDLE's obligations were for the time period that Mr. Clip was working. But what the record does show is that his supervisor was clearly aware of what he was doing, had knowledge of it, assigned him those roles and responsibilities, and rated him on those.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Case is submitted. That concludes our session for this afternoon.